All right, so Daniel chapter 12, the final chapter of Daniel. And of course, again, just like I mentioned, like always, I'm teach out of the ESV. So we're going to be at chapter 12. And with this is I wanted to share with you that, you know, that actually kind of fit into this chapter that we're happen to be dealing with, right? And Matthew chapter 24, Jesus's own words about the last days. Okay, Matthew 24, but also in Revelation. And you can never read Daniel without Revelation, and that's Revelation chapter 12. So Daniel chapter 12, Matthew chapter 24, and Revelation chapter 12. And that's sort of a moment Daniel has in a section of scripture, and that we're dealing with, that we're actually reading. And so 70 years of Israel's captivity is over. It's time for them to go back and rebuild. They go back, but not all of them go back. And in fact, most of them don't go back. And most Israelites actually stayed in Babylon, didn't have any motivation to rebuild. And this broke Daniel's heart, and he's upset. He fasted, mourned, he prayed. And while he's praying, an angel from heaven came and gave him a revelation. And that's chapters 10, 11, and 12 of Daniel. Pretty much saying, Daniel, I got bad news for you. The 70 years of captivity was just the beginning of the sorrows. It's going to get far worse than this. There's going to be a generation after generation after generation of oppressors who will come. And your people will suffer throughout their coming history, even to the very end of days, when another ruler is going to come, whom we know as the Antichrist. And it'll really be bad at that time. And that's the message he gets. It's pretty hopeless until now. Now, thinking of this, we're conditioned in many different ways when it comes to what happens in our life. Just like when we have pets, right? There's an aspect of conditioning, right? But we're also conditioned as well. We're creatures who live by conditioned responses. I'm married, and when I hear Ruth in the kitchen, I know it's time for me to get out of bed. And it's just what I do. It's what we've always done. When I know she's about to come home, it's time to clean up house, straighten it up. When we get in the car together, it's a little bit different, though. When I'm in my car alone, I have the stereo cranked up loud and I'm just listening to worship. And, you know, people in the car next to me can hear the music and, you know, it's loud. But when she's in the car with me, it's down really low so we could talk. She's got me trained pretty well. And I heard about this man. This man says to the doc, his doctor, right? Doc, my wife is hard of hearing and I need to bring her in to see you. And the doctor says, no problem. We'll set up an appointment. But until then, there's a simple test you can give her to find out how bad this hearing loss has gotten. So here's what you do. You stand about 40 feet away from her and in a normal conversational tone, say something to your wife. And if she doesn't respond, move closer. 30 feet, and then say it again. And then, if there's no response, go 20 feet. No response, then that could kind of tell you about how bad this hearing loss is. Now, so that night, his wife is cooking dinner, and he's in the living room in a normal tone, honey, what's for dinner? No response. He moves in a little closer, honey, what's for dinner? No response. So now he's in the dining room, honey, what's for dinner? No response. So now he's in the kitchen. Honey, what's for dinner? No response. Now right behind her and says in a firm voice, "Honey, what's for dinner?" She turns around and says, "For the fifth time, I said it's chicken." So what happened here? She didn't have the problem. Did she, right? He had the problem. So every relationship, if it's a healthy relationship, has a conditioning and a response mechanism to it. And we have a relationship with God, and our part is to respond to his situation. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 19, we love him because what? He first loved us. And God initiated, we respond. God sent his son into the world, provided a means by which we could hear the gospel, whether it's a pastor, a book, whatever it might be, we respond to that. But that's just the beginning. Our whole life should be built on response to God. We're going to look at that as we finish out the book of Daniel. Now, just to refresh your memory, we're closing in chapter 12, okay? This is a long vision that had lasted three chapters. Chapters 10, 11, and now 12 is the fourth and final and probably the longest of all revelatory visions that Daniel has received in this book. The messenger projects all the way to the end of days for Daniel. He sees the scope of the world history from his time onward into the great tribulation period. Now in chapter 12, the light shines through the darkness, through the hopeless years of the foretold history. So it's as if when the night becomes blackest, the light becomes brightest right afterwards. So it is with world history, okay? It's the same thing. And just when things are getting to the very worst, God will then offer his very best. And hope arises in chapter 12. Let's look at verse 1 through 2. It says, "At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince, who has charge of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt." So, a time for trouble, there's promise of deliverance, and then resurrection of the dead. Now, look at it says at that time, and we're going to stop right here, okay? Just consider that phrase, at that time. Now, when you read that phrase like that, what do you ask? At what time, right? Well, here's where I'll jog your memory and have you reach back where we left off in chapter 11. That's time he's dealing with, about what's happening at that time that he was dealing with. And remember, this is one continuous vision. An angelic messenger foretells a time when Israel will be oppressed in the coming few hundred years, but then reaches to a very end of history, the time of the end. It describes an antichrist, this last bad ruler, who's going to come and oppress the Jews. At that time, when antichrist ascends to power, it describes the antichrist, this last bad ruler who's going to come. So at that time, when he walks into the temple and desecrates, at that time where he consumes all religions of the world, at that time where there's a massive war that accumulates in the Battle of Armageddon, at that time, hope will dawn, hope will arise. Now, it gets darker and darker and darker just before dawn. And then there's hope. So it says, at that time. Now, also, the angel Michael, okay, when we hear about him here, often associated with spiritual battles. We see that in Daniel chapter 10, verse 13, chapter 10, verse 21, in Jude chapter 1, verse 9, Revelation chapter 12, verse 7. Michael's called the archangel. Jude chapter 1, verse 9, he's Satan's true opposite, okay? Now, you remember back in the Daniel, we talked about some people put Satan as the opposite of God. And that's not the case. It's not. That is not opposite. But here, Michael and Satan, that's more aligned with being opposite. Satan's not the opposite of Jesus. He's the opposite of Michael, this high-ranking angel. Now, in addition to his role as the spiritual warrior, Michael has a special job in protecting Israel. God has appointed Michael the spiritual guardian over Israel. Now, and there shall be a time of trouble. Okay. This refers to the time of persecution for Israel, a world calamity known as the Great Tribulation. Now, watch this description. Okay. It says, such as never was since there was a nation, even unto that time. Jesus quoted in Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, for then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now. No, and never will be. Okay, so we get the point, right? This is going to be so bad that no other time and period, no time period in history would be able to compare with how bad it's going to be. It's going to be bad for the world. It's going to be bad, especially for the Jews, because that's the context of these three chapters, the Jewish people. And if you think about it, okay, Israel has suffered so much in its history. It suffered by the hands of the Babylonians all the way to the Hitlers. They have suffered. But that's nothing compared to what they will suffer in the final period of history that we're dealing with here. Let's look at what I said in Matthew chapter 24, verse 7. For the nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. Okay. Now you might think, oh, come on. We always had that stuff, right? Well, read the next verse. It says, all these things are the beginning of sorrows. So then if we were to shoot down in to the verse 15 of in Matthew, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holiest place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So again, this is in Matthew 24, verse 15. We're still in Matthew kind of here for the moment. Now he's given instructions to the people who are living locally in Jerusalem. And then it goes on to say, let him who is on the housetops not go down and take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to these who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time. No, nor shall ever be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Okay. Now let's jump back to Daniel. Okay. It says the same thing Daniel says, an unprecedented time of pain. Tribulation is coming upon this world. Now, this time period goes under several titles in the Bible, right? 26 times it's called the day of the Lord, okay? But we also, if we look at Isaiah 26 and 34, it calls it the indignation. Isaiah 63 calls it the day of God's vengeance. Revelation 6, it calls it the great day of his wrath. And then also in Revelation 6, the day of the wrath of the Lamb. So it sounds like an oxymoron almost, right? The wrath of the Lamb. Have you ever seen a wrathful lamb? Imagine instead of Rambo, it's Lambo. So now we're hearing what I just said, right? And what the angel said to Daniel and what Jesus said, you might be asking, well, how bad can it get? Well, I mean, we've had bad times in history before, right? I mean, we had the Holocaust, World War I, World War II, pandemics, whatever the case may be. Look at just what's happening today. How bad can it get? Well, I'm glad you asked. It says the details of this last period of time are outlined in Revelation chapter 6 through chapter 19. Here's the summary, okay? War, famine. Again, you say, well, we've always had that. What about keep listening? 25% of the world killed. Heavenly bodies falling out of the heaven toward earth. 1/3 of the earth destroyed. 1/3 of the seas destroyed. 1/3 of all the freshwater sources are on earth eliminated. Release of hell's demons to overrun the earth. The Antichrist and his armies coming and slaughtering millions. Sores breaking out on people. The sunlight scorching people, burning them to death. Darkness covering the earth. But the special target of the coming leader, the Antichrist, will be the Jewish people. That's the target of the Antichrist. That's why Jesus in Matthew 24 gives special address to the Jews. Let him who reads understand. If you're living in Jerusalem and you see this happening, the Antichrist going into the rebuilt temple and desecrating it and calling himself God, better get out of town. It's going to be bad. Don't get your iPad. Don't get your iPhone. Leave and flee to the mountains. But then despite the terrors of that time, deliverance is assured. No matter how great the attack is against the Jewish people, God promised to preserve them. He'll never break his promise to Abraham in Genesis chapter 17, verse 7. It says, and I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants after you. Yet this promise of deliverance isn't for every last person of Jewish heritage, but for everyone found written in the book. Now, in verse 2, something you need to know about the resurrection is when the Bible speaks of the resurrection, it's speaking of the physical body, not the spiritual resurrection. It's not just using a metaphor. It speaks of the physical body being brought back to life. And it's always the hope of Israel. Now, thinking about life, there's three great facts of life. And if you don't know them yet, you need to know them now, okay? Everybody dies. Everybody gets evaluated. That's judgment. Everybody gets resurrected. Rich, poor, young, old, famous, obscure. Those are the three. Everyone dies. Everyone gets evaluated. Everybody gets resurrected. Okay. Now, everybody in history so far has died. I can't think of only two exceptions, and I'll let you guys have fun with those and figure out who that is. But death, okay, we're talking about dying and death. Death is mentioned 394 times in the Bible. Solomon in Ecclesiastes said, to everything there is a season, a purpose for everything under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die. Now listen to the words of Jesus and how close they sound to the words of Daniel chapter 12. This is Jesus speaking in John chapter 5. For the hour is coming in which all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. Make no mistake, every human being has eternal life. That is, that they'll live forever. But the question is, where? Where will they live? Okay? When the Bible speaks about eternal and everlasting life, it often speaks about the just living in God's presence for those who are saved. But everyone will continue forever because everyone has a soul, and a soul is eternal. Now, for New Testament believers, do you know when our resurrection will take place? Our physical resurrection? Any guesses? Well, the rapture of the church. Those who are dead in Christ shall what? Rise first. Then we who are alive and remain. We see in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 16 through 17, will be what? Caught up together with them to meet the Lord in the air. So now we're thinking, okay, the church, all right, the church wasn't in the first 69 weeks of Daniel. They certainly won't be in the 70th week of Daniel or the tribulation period. Our resurrection happens at the rapture of the church. The 7-year period of tribulation at the end, which I believe the Old Testament saints will be resurrected with tribulation believers. All of that, even though it's in phases, constitutes the first resurrection, or the resurrection unto life. So no matter how long you live here, you might live, make it over 100, but that's nothing compared to eternity. You'll live gazillion of years in eternity. This is just a warm-up act, the dress rehearsal for the real show. And that's what the angel's getting Daniel to see. So let's look at verse 3. It's a promise for the righteous. In verse 3, it says, "And those who are wise shall shine like the brightest of the sky above. And those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." Okay. Now, here. Okay. Now, it's even getting better than the resurrection. Okay. It's called the remuneration. Those who live in God's wisdom will shine. And despite all the calamity, all the difficulty coming upon Israel, God has those who are wise, and they shall shine. Now, talk about hope. The resurrection isn't even the end of it. Rewards come, the ability to reflect God's glory to some capacity. The wisest people in the world are saved people. Fools are unbelievers, and that's how the Bible describes a fool. A fool isn't a guy who has flunked out of the third grade. It's a guy who rejects Christ. A wise person receives Christ. Now, as we begin verse 4, now we're going to see some principles based, some principles that exist, and then some questions along with those principles that I would believe that would be considered appropriate for the response to God. And then verse 4, the instructions to the sealed book. "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." So, what principle do we have here? Well, God reveals truth. The question is now, do I respond to his authority? But here in verse 4, the messenger says to Daniel, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words." Now, please read that right away, okay? He's not saying, "Daniel, dude, shut up." No, he's not. He's simply just saying, close up or seal up. Shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. So in other words, Daniel, you're getting this revelation. You're not to keep this revelation private and to yourself. You're to seal it and preserve it until the end of days. Now, I find it significant that after 2,600 years, that's how long ago this vision of Daniel is given about, 2,600 years pass, and the book of Daniel has never been more relevant than it is today in this generation. Seal it, keep it until the time of the end. Knowledge shall increase and people will go to and fro. And I think the intention and the context of this verse is at the end time, people will be going to and fro looking for answers to questions. Why are all those events happening? Why are all these things happening? They're going to go and they're going to look to the book of Daniel. And they're going to find answers. The book of Daniel will become clearer and clearer and clearer, especially to those in the end of days. In the tribulation period, the people will be running around looking for answers as to why things are so bad here on earth. I'm starting to ask those questions now. Looking around us, why is it so bad? They're going to find that Daniel, as well as Revelation, it's going to be a play-by-play book giving them all the answers they need. The knowledge of the end times will be increased. There's a greater principle in this in verse 4, and it's Daniel's told to preserve revelations given so that the people at the end age could refer to them, read them, and understand them. So, God reveals truth, okay? Are you responding to his authority in your life? When you read the Bible or hear a sermon, are you responding to the truth? And I ask this question because this is probably one of the greatest frustrations, whether it's a Bible teacher or a pastor, that they might have. Okay? We hear sermons every week, go to church every week. We're exposed to life-changing principles every week, but not many lives are changing every week. Every week in Christian churches around America, right? Husbands are still dumping their wives. Women are still leaving their husbands. People are still lying to each other. People are refusing to forgive each other. Christians are gossiping with each other. There's all this stuff to happen. And we ask, how can that be, being exposed to God's life, changing truths every week? Well, here's how. You can listen in two different kinds of ways. You could be an active listener, or you could be a passive listener. When I watch TV, I watch very passively. In fact, I go through the channels like crazy. I'm going up and down, and it drives Ruth crazy. I could be there for 30 minutes. I don't know what to watch. Passively, right? And we could do the same thing, the sermons, right? We're listening passively, but we're not actively, right? We're not like, man, God is speaking to me. I'm going to apply this. It's more like, oh, nice message. And then that's it. So, and sometimes that happens. And I think about it, when I was studying this, I thought about this time I was in Rancho's Palos Verdes with the kids and all that. And we were at the beach has rocks. It's not even a real beach. It's like rocks and boulders. And I was thinking about, I was doing something with Savannah. She was up on this rock. So my attention was on Savannah. And Mikey goes, Dad, did you see how I skipped that rock? And I was so focused on Savannah at the top of this boulder. I was like, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then Mikey goes, Dad, you're only saying that to make me feel better because I never skipped a rock. I was passively listening, but not actively listening. And you know, Jesus said, take heed to what you hear. But he also said, take heed to how you hear. Okay. Now, a few suggestions on how to respond to God's authority, right? You expose yourself to the truth. You evaluate yourself by the truth. And then you engage yourself with the truth. Now, I'll explain that here, okay? So exposing yourself to the truth. You're doing it right now, whether you're in church or you're here right now in this study. The Bible's open. You're being exposed. Now, let me make a suggestion to that, or take it the suggestion to another level, right? Start taking notes in church. Taking notes in studies. Because if you're like every other human being on earth, right? We forget things. We probably forget most of everything we hear right after we hear it. But if you write it down, what you believe God is speaking, you can go back and refer to it later. And then engage at a different level. You're exposing yourself at a different level. Now, if you want to take it a step further, get into small group and discuss those things, exposing yourself to truth. And then evaluate yourself by truth. It's possible when we listen to a sermon to deflect the message, right? You see, we think thoughts like, I know somebody who needs to hear this. Yeah, you and me, we all hear it, you know, and we can become like spiritual Houdinis, right? You remember Houdini, who could get out of anything? And God's trying to wrestle us to the ground with this truth, and we're really good at getting out of it. We're good at evaluating truth. We're just not good at evaluating ourselves by the truth. Now, lastly, engage yourself with the truth. What do I mean by that? When you're reading your Bible, when you're listening to a sermon, you ask yourself this question. Is this a command I'm reading that I must obey? Is this a warning I must heed? Is this something I must stay away from? That's engaging yourself with the truth. So here's another principle with another question, okay? God regulates the future. Do I respond to his sovereignty? Let's look at verses 5-8. How long will this time of trouble be that is talked about here in Daniel? And then we'll see how it answers the response to sovereignty. So it says here, then I, Daniel, look and behold, two others stood, one on this bank of the stream and one on that bank of the stream. And someone said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream, how long shall it be till the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream. He raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times and a half a time. And that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be finished. I heard, but I did not understand. Then I said, oh, my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things? So let's get this picture here. Okay. Daniel sees two angels, one on one side of the Tigris River and the other on the other side. And these angels were at a considerable distance from each other. And then above and between was this man clothed in linen that we already saw in chapter 10. One of the angels has a question, which is interesting. How long till the fulfillment of these things? In other words, how long will all those oppressive events that have been described so far, how long are they going to last? The question is, how long is this going to last? Here's the answer that's given. Time, times, and half a time. Okay. Now remember that phrase back in chapter 11, right? Time, times, and half of that, an ancient way of saying 3.5 years. So here's the deal. Here's the answer. The reign of the Antichrist, the worst period of history, will last 3.5 years. That's the timing of it. Now we're told that in other places also, Revelation chapter 11, verse 3, Revelation chapter 12, verse 6. But listen to how it's put, okay? This shall last 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years based on a 360 lunar year cycle. Revelation chapter 13, verse 5. The Antichrist is given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue 42 months. That is 3.5 years. aren't you glad Daniel said, I don't get it? I am, because I've been studying this and taught now the whole book of Daniel, and I'm coming to the end saying there's still a lot I don't get. And I know you might feel that way, but Daniel felt that way and he confessed it. And here's the interesting answer, okay? And we're going to see in verses 19 through 13, the remaining verses of this chapter, okay? God will purify and preserve his people and set a limit of days to the time of trouble. It says, he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are shut up and sealed until the time of the end. Many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined. But the wicked shall act wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But those who are wise shall understand. And from the time that the regular burnt offering is taken away from the abomination that makes desolate is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and arrives at the 1,335th days. But go your way till the end, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end days. So we got a little bit of a problem here in verse 11. It says that from time the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. So we have an extra month in there for some reason. But just when we're scratching our heads saying, what? The very next verse says, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. So this extra month, the extra 45 days or so, for a total of 75 days after the 3.5 year time period reign of the terror of the Antichrist. Okay. Now the question is, what happens during that month? What happens during the 45 days beyond that? The answer is, I'm not sure. I'm not sure because we're not told. Daniel's asking questions, the angel's asking questions, and sort of all he gets is this. It says, go away now, seal this up until the very end times. And I'll guarantee you this, when all this comes down during the great tribulation period, they'll get it. They'll understand it. It'll make sense. Now, I can make a few guesses, and I'll probably do that. Let's see here. The very last battle of history, the bloodiest battle of history in the future, and it's called the Battle of what? Armageddon. With nations gathered together in the Middle East, and it's a bloodbath. It's probably going to take a period of time to mop up after the Battle of Armageddon. So to have a month and then 45 days, 75 extra days, it would probably be one of those activities that would go on during that time. Now, here's a second possibility. According to Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 25, he's going to judge nations of earth based on their treatment of the nation of Israel. So after Jesus comes back at the end days, after the abomination of desolation, it could take a period of time for that judgment to take place. Or the third, according to Ezekiel chapter 20, the Lord will gather believing Jews from all over the world back to the land of Israel. That travel arrangement could take some time. So here, God is regulating the future, which proves to us that God is sovereign. And you know what that means when I say that God is sovereign? It means that he's all-powerful, ultimately supreme. Therefore, he can govern and control the very creation that he's made. We believe God's sovereign. Now, the question is, are we responding to God's sovereignty? If you believe God's sovereign, how do you respond to that? We see in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, it says, for we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose from them. Or we also see in Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11, we were chosen having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. That is sovereignty. So when we look around the world, it looks like man is ruling. But then when we read the Bible and we discover God is ruling, overruling, God is in charge. God's powerful, personal, and he's involved in control. Now, another question to you is, what does that actually do for you? Believing in a sovereignty God, of God. Well, I'll tell you what it should do. It ought to produce patience within us. It ought to produce gratitude in us. It ought to produce stability. Because even the Bible says that when sudden terror comes to life, to the life of a righteous person, he is not shaken. He's not afraid. There's that initial shakeup, but then there's a calming as we realize there's a sovereign God who has this thing all wired out. Just like we talked about this morning about the valley of the shadow of death, right? There's a shadow, but there's a light on the other side. A shadow of a dog cannot bite, okay? He already has everything planned out. We're supposed to go through this trial. We're supposed to go through this obstacle. And here what's being said in Daniel, to go through it because we're waiting for the end, right? Our eternal kingdom, our eternal home with him. So if you don't have much patience, if you don't have much gratitude, and you don't have much stability, it's really because you don't really believe in God's sovereignty. God regulates the future. So again, how do we respond? Well, we take a close look. And lastly, when we take this look and we'll close out from here, God rewards his own. Do I respond to him personally? In verse 13, the final word to Daniel, it says, "But you go your way until the end, for you shall rest." We talked about that earlier, right? Resting, and will arise to your inheritance at the end of days. Same thing that I was talking about here, being in the house of the Lord, what? Forever. Daniel, he's saying, Daniel, you're going to rest. You're going to die, but you're going to be resurrected and eventually be in the glorious kingdom that you once predicted. Now, here's the promise, okay? Daniel, all right? The promise. We don't know how long Daniel lived after this. He was probably 90 years old almost in this chapter. And I only assumed he died not long after the final revelation, but he died with the promise that after he rests, he'll be resurrected and rewarded personally by God. That's his assurance. There's a rest and there's a reward for all of the God's children who have a personal relationship with him. Do you have a personal relationship with God? If I were to ask you the question, how long do you have left to live? You would have to probably say to me, I don't know. But if I was to ask you a second question, do you have assurance that when you die, you'll be forever in heaven with him? If your answer is, boy, I hope so, that is the wrong answer. If you are a Bible-believing Christian, your answer would be, I have that assurance and I know so. That is the personal relationship with him. Daniel had a personal relationship. He had a personal relationship with a very personal God. He spoke to God every day. God spoke to him. And there's a real relationship going on. That's the greatest human experience. And that is to know God. Paul the Apostle wrote in Philippians, the heart cry of his life, right? That I may know him and the power of his resurrection. And Jesus said This is eternal life, that you may know the only true God and Jesus Christ, whom he has sent. That's a personal relationship. Have you responded to him personally? He made you that you might know him. Do you? Open the word. Have you surrendered personally your life into his hands? Allowed him to take you through those dark valleys. Allowed him to help you grow and have that relationship with him. And that's what he reassured Daniel here at the end through this long, exhaustive vision that he's had. All the trials from Daniel chapter 1 all the way through. You can sit there and say, well, that is a rough life. Well, God carries us through whatever roughness that we have going on for that moment. But we have a reassurance that we will be rested and resurrected and be with him. And the place that has been prepared for us.